Hi, and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels F1 podcast. It's Paul here again with...
Dan.
And Lee.
And we're without Chris this week because he's wearing a top hat and playing an accordion.
As is his wont.
Well, yes. So, finish playing your accordion, Chris, and get back here for next week, otherwise you're in serious trouble. Canada, then. It saw the return of a driver who obviously hasn't been himself due to various circumstances recently, but he proved fully on Sunday that he's back to where he should be and doing exactly the things that he should be. Yep, Roman Grosjean ran into someone. He also possibly ruined our Pasta disaster predictor because one Lotus finished well and it wasn't him. But apart from that, what did we all think?
It was all right, wasn't it? It was nothing.
It wasn't dull, but yeah, wasn't dull, but wasn't memorable.
There were things happened.
It was worth watching all the way through.
Yeah, and of course, reading the live blog that we were doing on the site at the same time.
It would have been a lot worse if Vettel and Massa weren't out of position.
Yeah, I mean they did provide quite a bit of racing with the charge through, and it proves that it's not a procession because faster cars can overtake.
It's a procession because the cars qualify in the order of how good they are.
Does this mean qualifying is becoming less important? Should we just have a random draw for the grid and then truth will out?
We could do.
Although, keep Maldonado at the back.
So you just invoked Bernie Eccleston for a second.
I have. I'm feeling strange. This table's got a wonky leg. Oh no, it's my brain. I think I need to stand under a sprinkler.
I'm not sure how we tempt Bernie Eccleston out of you. I imagine it involves like holding a fistful of money.
Yeah, I was going to say large amounts of cash usually does it.
I could always bribe him to do it.
Yeah, that's football.
Oh.
But dominating win for Lewis again,
as you'd expect, yeah, from his recent form.
Yeah, he's just been on it constantly. He was on it constantly all weekend, really, when he had the chance, apart from stuffing it in the wall, but that was freak weather conditions.
I thought he was going to stuff it in the wall in the race, like with what he was doing.
I did think it was going to be a bad race for him.
Yeah.
Up until qualifying, and then he walked it.
Yeah. Nico kept getting close, but every time Nico got vaguely close, Lewis just...
found another 5 tenths in his ass pocket.
Yeah. Yeah, never let him get within 1 second for the DRS. We're asking the question again. Was Nico beaten by the time the lights went out?
I think Nico was beaten by the time the lights went out in the second race.
It must be hard, mustn't it? Like, when they did the podium interviews, and Lewis was asked like how he felt with Nico catching up to him, and Ted Kravitz, I think, said, "Oh, you seem to have things in hand." He said, "Oh, I wasn't too worried because I always had enough in my pocket to do it." Can you imagine being someone's teammate when they're just basically saying next to you, say, I know whatever he throws at me, I've got a little bit more.
Is that a bit of gamesmanship, though?
I don't think that was gamesmanship. I think he meant that. I think that was just the honest way he felt about the situation.
No, I mean, I think the relationship between them now has been described as neutral at best.
I think the relationship between them is distant.
Never getting closer than 1 second. And one thing, Chris isn't here, but he did send a few points through earlier, and this kind of ties in because it's Mercedes related. Lewis asked on the radio how much lift and coast did he need to do. 100. If that was in meters, Bono responded 50 will be fine. Does this not break the radio rules over telling a driver how to race?
Do we look like the stewards?
We were watching F1 Midweek Report later, and Mark Blundell's put on a bit of weight, so I'm kind of getting there. This whole radio thing. Should they just either open it up completely or just ban team radios altogether?
Well, there is a line between the technical information the teams are allowed to give about things like fuel saving. and coaching the drivers on how to drive, which is what was going on a few years ago.
Yeah.
But that is that is coaching on how to drive, surely. But that, then again, that you can say, I suppose, there's another rule in it as well, isn't there, where reliability can...
Yeah, you're allowed to tell the driver if something's about to fail, I think.
So
at the moment.
Essentially, if you can run out of fuel...
That would be a reliability thing.
Yeah. Yeah, although if you're Fernando Alonso, you turn around and say, stuff it.
Well, they seem to be allowed to say, back off and push.
Yeah.
And obviously Lift and Coast must fall into that that window of what's allowed.
Mm. But as we saw, they are not allowed to ask how they are doing compared to the other cars.
Which would be coaching.
But yeah, we mentioned the radio, Alonso's mini meltdown. That was interesting to hear. I think the frustrations are finally beginning to come to the surface, because regardless of the PR front that they've been putting on about, oh, it's a development season,
yeah,
it's all about next year, we knew we were going to struggle.
Do you think there's any way in any race the McLaren drivers have not been feeling, I wish I could be in contention here?
Monaco.
Well, yeah. outside of the race, it's a lot easier to do the PR thing than when you're behind the wheel and trying to chase the car in front of you, trying to catch the car in front of you.
Yeah, and sometimes when the car in front of you has been a manner.
Yeah.
So I
think it's unsurprising that the frustrations show through in the middle of a race.
I think the key point of his message back to the pits was, having to drive like this is make me look like an amateur, or... words to that effect. I know he used the word like make me look like an amateur, and it's for a driver of Alonso's capability, that's a double world champion. And also, like, people talk about the age of Jenson Button, you know, coming towards the twilight of his career, but I mean, what, Alonso can only be what, a year, 2 years younger, tops.
Only a couple of years between them.
It's just a terrible situation for both drivers, you know, that they're in at the minute.
We were talking about this before, and the way that F1 goes, it's kind of cyclical, because there's been times when Ferrari have been absolutely useless, Mercedes were brilliant at a couple of points, McLaren have had bad spells before,
yeah.
Williams are appearing to come back from another downswing. After dominating the 90s, it's just unfortunate that I think that McLaren have got two world champions, and unfortunately they've got out of bed the wrong side, and it's on the side that's been sprinkled with Lego and upturned plugs.
Yeah, and it is a development season for them.
Yeah, it can only be. You know, have they? If they get anything competitive this season, it's going to be a bonus.
Yeah, it's also going to be a miracle.
Yeah, Monaco notwithstanding, of course, but that's...
Where else is there where you could see them being competitive?
I don't think there is.
No, that's what I was thinking. I can't... I mean, Monaco's such a freak circuit that they're just... I mean, are they going to score points again this year? The way
I think the chance to score points is there.
Yeah.
If the development goes right, if the back end of the top 10 is very variable, you can go to one circuit and there will be one team there. Go to a different one, it's a different team getting in.
But don't forget, they're going to be looking at penalties every race very soon.
True.
And when you're already struggling to get out...
Well, they're looking at them now, because Jensen has run out of some powertrain components.
Oh, is that it
yeah,
now?
Yeah, his drive-through was for using his fifth EMH of the season.
Jesus.
So they're already into penalties for... the Sky were trying to explain it pre-race, and they actually had to expand the grid technically, to about 40 positions just to fit in the penalties, which obviously they don't apply and don't make you start a lap down, although effectively with the drive-through, that was half a lap.
Yeah,
there's going to be more penalties, and I think the team are well aware of that, so, you know, do what you can and try and make the best out of a bad situation is all that they can do.
So, does it work like a penalty for each component?
Yeah, you're allowed four complete power units per season. And each of the components in the power unit, if you use a fifth one, be it a turbo or one of the electrical management units, once you move on to your fifth and beyond, then you start getting penalised. The heavier penalties are for the actual internal combustion engine, but there are penalties for using a fifth one of each component in the powertrain.
It doesn't work, this idea, really, does it? I realise what it's there for, that it's there to, because it's supposed to make teams make more reliable components, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Therefore, cut costs. But when they do start going wrong, all that's going to happen is all these teams are going to get loads of penalties, which are going to ship them back for the grid, which is going to stop them making revenue through points.
Yeah, that's
ridiculous.
It's probably going to get to the point where everyone's going to be on a penalty, apart from Mercedes and Ferrari drivers.
At which point, why not turn the engine up to maximum wick?
Yeah.
Knowing that you're going to get penalties anyway,
you
may as well go for death or glory. Well, not literally death, because that would be...
shot or bust.
Shot or bust.
Shot or bust. Seeing as Apple have now put these new clean and explicit marks on podcasts, and we don't want to end up with an explicit one because we cut down our audience. Other major thing that happened this weekend, the return of Williams to the podium. Little fortunate in getting it because of Vettel's penalty in for practice and his appalling qualifying time when his electrics were going on him.
And a dodgy pit stop
and Kimi's spin. But we saw Williams' driver on the third step. Flattered to deceive, or are they now the best of the... were they the best of the rest this weekend?
Well... yes, they were the best of the rest this weekend, as the podium showed. With Williams, they've not got the money of some of the other teams. They can't build a car that's going to be good on every circuit. So they've gone for a car that's going to be good on some circuits.
So
this was one of those circuits.
Yeah, so they're trying to maximise their opportunities.
So, yeah, something like... Monaco, which is a complete aberration, very different to everything else, they're not going to try and optimise their car for that at all.
No. Whereas Canada, with there being a lot of speedier sections,
then yeah, go for it.
Mm.
To be fair, I mean the Williams were Williams got no oh, where have the words gone. Williams were flattered a little bit by Ferrari's mistakes.
Mm.
Or not Ferrari, not mistakes, but, you know, Kimi had a spin, Vettel had a problem in qualifying.
Ferrari's misfortunes.
Yeah, that was the word I was looking for.
I think without those misfortunes, you would have seen Williams fighting the Ferraris.
I think without Vettel's qualifying woes, I think he'd have been well ahead of the Williams, and I think maybe Kimi would have been behind that. But I mean, look, let's face it: the only reason that Bottas was on the podium was because Kimi span. Not only did he spin, he lit his tyres up and ruined his tyres because he had to come in again, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why that happened. It wasn't because Williams beat them on track. Ferrari beat Ferrari.
That is a fair point. Red Bull didn't have the best of weekends either. They certainly Danny Ricciardo.
13th
at a race that he won last year.
Mm.
I mean, we'll get onto the whole engine situation later. This week's episode of. The Renault Wars.
They'll be bathing in penalties soon, won't they?
I don't think they're all that far off. Because they've gone through various engine components.
Yeah.
I'm going to call a halt to this. It pains me just to talk about what penalties are upcoming because of engines failing and having to replace bits. Is all this just taking away from where it should be won and lost, which is on track, which is who can develop the best car and who can drive the car the fastest?
I think lots of people turn around on the programs and things about Formula One and say, oh, it's a complicated sport, maybe it should be a bit simpler, maybe it doesn't put people off because of how complicated it is. I've always thought that the complication in Formula One is part of the sport, and it's one of the reasons that people like me get so geeky about it, is because there's so many things. It's a step too far, this, when you've got to try and work out why Jenson Button has to go into the has to have a drive through and what did you say it went wrong?
It was a EMH component, yeah. On his.
We shouldn't be spending time trying to work out what the bloody EMH is.
Yeah,
that's not the fans' job. Knowing what on the cars are failing, and I think that it's not embarrassing is the wrong word, but when you're speaking to somebody that doesn't watch Formula One, and you're trying to explain these things to them.
Well, it's easy to explain. You just say a component on his car failed and he changed it too many times.
Yeah, but it just feels like something that shouldn't be there.
Yeah. I think that as fans, we've said this before, as fans what we want is close racing.
Yeah.
And if you get into the situation where you've got the front-running teams just throwing all the money in the world at the cars, they're going to run away with it and you're not going to have the close racing. I don't like the situation where we've got all of these penalties that are coming so soon in the season for what should be fairly big teams. On the other hand, I'm not sure what the alternative is.
Mm. Yeah, it's there's not a simple answer. If you know the answer, please feel free to tweet us. But the penalties in my mind. It's spoiling. You know, the races shouldn't be won and lost in the stewards' room between qualifying and Sunday afternoon. You know, the race should be won on track. A qualifying session, a race. And this is where I think things are going wrong at the moment. Hugely. It's just, you know, it's too many penalties, too many regulations. I accept fuel saving has to be an issue because you can only put so much fuel in a car.
Yep.
But don't regulate it. Put so much fuel in a car. Let the drivers drive flat out. See if they get to the end. But that's all the fuel you're getting.
What about they've got the fuel flow meter, haven't they? Which is supposed to regulate how much fuel goes in, which
to 100 litres an hour,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
What if part of the regulations were that there isn't a standard fuel tank, is there? There's dimensions they have to work by.
100 kilos of fuel. 100 kilos of fuel maximum.
So what if there was a standardised fuel tank that was either pressurised or, I don't know, false bottom is probably the one where it's probably a much better, more technical word than false bottom. So the FIA work out how much fuel a car needs to have to run a Grand Prix, and then everyone has to have that amount of fuel.
It would make more sense.
They would be given a list of Grand Prix, of circuits. And there would be a list of, and before the season started, they would know how much fuel they had in their car for that race.
And so basically, what you're saying is they have an efficiency target. You say 70 laps of Canada. Canada is, I don't know, call it 3 miles.
Yeah,
that's 210 miles. you've got to do X miles per gallon, so you're allowed X gallons of fuel.
Yeah.
FIA measure it, then go.
Yeah. And then it's down, you know, the drivers should know at all times how much fuel they've got, when to back off.
You'd think it would.
When to push. If you push, it's going to take more fuel.
Yeah, and it might, a knock-on effect of that might end up, it might equalise the engines as well. Because every team is going to want to use every drop of fuel in the car. You know, so they're all going to try and optimise themselves for that amount of fuel they've got. So surely that'd go some way towards engine equalisation, maybe.
How different would that be to what we've got at the moment, though? Where
I think
people are complaining that they can't race flat out because it'll use too much fuel.
But, well, they're not. The teams aren't putting the full 100 kilograms in.
Yeah.
Also, a couple of teams. It's been claimed fueled a little light this week because they were expecting safety cars, which in itself is a fuel saving.
And that would negate that.
Yeah. And
did I just fix Formula One?
I think you might have done.
Yes.
Yeah.
But by making them use more fuel than they're doing at the moment.
Oh, well.
but not by massive amounts. Yeah, because, I mean, teams were fueling light because they were expecting safety cars, which, a rarity for Canada, it didn't actually happen. I think there were a couple of teams wanting to see a safety car. I was amazed that we didn't. Just because it's Canada.
Did you notice Jensen's, well, we talk about fuel and engines and stuff like that, Jensen's saying why McLaren had such fuel problems?
No,
because I did wonder this myself during the race. And I think it was Natalie Pinkham or something like that spoke when she was speaking to him and said, well, if you're underpowered, what's the fuel efficiency problem you've got? And he said, well, because we're underpowered and we're slower, we're at full revs on a straight for longer periods of time.
So they are going to be burning more fuel.
Yeah, I'd never thought about it like that. You instantly think,
yes,
slower, less fuel.
Yeah. But of course, the engine isn't running at its best, so it's going to be burning more fuel to do less work.
Yeah,
in effect. Other thing that we saw this weekend was Force India seemed to have a good race.
Hooray!
About time.
Yeah.
Again, like Williams, I think the circuit fits their car better, and no, their best qualifying performance, best race performance. You know, it's good to see. They've got the ability to actually mix it with the mid-grid teams rather than gradually slipping backwards, which is what everyone thought they were going to do right from the off.
So congratulations to them.
Yeah, well done to Force India.
Perez was impressive. I thought Perez has caught my eye a couple of times. Even like lower down, he's with beating Hulkenberg now and again as well. I think he's... He's looking really good this year.
You got to feel sorry for Perez because he's it's the, you know, the little time at McLaren
it's destroyed
his career.
When you look at how people were looking at him when he was in Sauber, you know, when he got a couple of podiums and stuff like that. Back then people were saying, "Oh, like, could he be a future world champion?"
Yeah, and as it turns out, we're hoping he's not the next Kovalainen.
Yeah.
At the other end of the scale, Toro Rosso did the going backwards this week, just a little bit.
Yeah, again, just a circuit that doesn't suit them, or
but
something different.
Verstappen had a penalty as well to start with.
Verstappen started out of position with a penalty, and it was kind of a bit anonymous from him, really.
Yeah, but even with Verstappen's penalty, Sainz is. Normally, he doesn't get talked about as much as Verstappen, but I think he's every bit the driver that Verstappen is.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
And he didn't do a whole lot. So
it was a little bit. They also took part in the weekend.
Yes, a bit like Sauber,
as did Sauber. Anyone notice anything noticeable about Sauber?
They weren't right at the back. They weren't right at the front.
Yeah. So Lotus, Grosjean. We've got the 2012 Grosjean back, haven't we?
Yeah, it's nice to see.
It's good to see him making another appearance. I didn't hit him. You did.
Yeah. You very much.
You
hit
really
him.
Did. Actually, I did not hit him. I did not. It's Paul. Oh, hi, Mark. Yeah. Anyone can name that reference? Tweet us. Yeah, he kind of forgot how long his car was, how wide his car was, that there was a car that he was passing.
If a manor goes into the back of you, it's not because he's hit you.
No. Yeah.
The funny thing is the fact that, like, the message straight after, it must have been the message as he was, like, coming back, you know, to go into the pits, that he radioed through was, he hit me, he hit me. And you just like, no, he didn't hit you. You know he didn't hit you. We all know he didn't hit you.
You ran over his front wing.
You're not fooling Charlie Whiting.
One other thing that came out of that I noticed, I already thought Will Stevens was one of the cockneyest blokes ever. He got even more cockney after Grosjean thumped him. I was expecting him to break out into something from Mary Poppins.
You what, mate?
But it was good to see Manor getting TV time at least.
Yeah.
Big advert on the back of the car for TFI Friday, which to all our non-UK listeners was a TV show that was popular in the late 90s and is making a one-off comeback this weekend. Unusual for... Then again, it's unusual place to sponsor a British TV show, a one-off British TV show in Canada, but it's Chris Evans and he's barking.
Yes, he can do what he likes.
Formula One, doesn't he?
And the other driver that we haven't mentioned yet is Senor Maldonado. I do believe we had some predictions running. Lee, if you would get the iPad out with the emails.
He's gone and spoiled our game, hasn't he?
Now, Pastor Maldonado finished the race and scored points. The predictions Lee is just about to bring up now, somewhere, you have...
Your prediction.
My prediction.
Lap 18.
Mm-hmm.
Turn 8.
Right.
You were wrong.
I was wrong.
Chris's prediction. Lap 1. Turn 4 to 5.
Ooh.
He was wrong. Me. Maldonado bump bump. Lap 1. Turn 1.
You were wrong.
But congratulations go to Mr. Daniel Ankers with Canada. He's going to defy expectations and finish the race.
Well done, Dan.
Thank you very much.
I applaud you.
I'm flabbergasted.
So we'll do the same for Austria. And
it's just the Maldonado predictor now.
Yeah. Yeah, it can't be the Pastor Disaster predictor when he didn't have a disaster. And now it's time for our other weekly feature. Renault threatened to leave Formula One again. So apparently this week, it's unless Mercedes agree to in-season engine development, that's what's going to make them pack up and go home. Are they crying wolf? No, because he works... Oh, no, I can't do that. Are they crying wolf? No, they're French, not Austrian.
Jeez.
Yeah, I had to get one.
This happens every time someone who was previously doing well in Formula One is doing less well. They threaten to leave unless all the rules get changed to suit them.
Yeah. I mean, it's not the first time Renault have done that...
This week.
This season. This month. I mean, Eric Boulier described the situation between Red Bull and Renault as... Don't say it, baby. ...fighting.
Are we allowed to say that and keep the...
I've got a beeper. They won't hear it. They might get another. Might have just heard some old Jacques Villeneuve. So, I did say it, baby. It's beyond fight. It's boring now. Again, that could just be PR spin about everything's rosy in the McLaren Honda garden when we know it really isn't. But if Renault are going to pack in again, Gerhard Berger keeps turning up at races. He's a big part of the VW Audi setup. Okay, he might just be there as a former driver and a former team principal. Because don't forget, he used to run Toro Rosso.
Yeah.
He could just be there in that role just to be seen. But
not this weekend, but like one of the previous races that's been, he did say that he was at that race for Audi as a representative of Audi, didn't he?
He did. Didn't actually see any quotes from him this week, but it may have been the same.
The fact he wasn't on camera and the fact he wasn't speaking mean he might have actually gone to do business.
There is a possibility, because he's a shameless self-publicist when he gets going, and he does like as much TV time as is humanly possible. In which case, Audi, we know you're listening to us. Get an engine developed just to shut Renault up.
And can we have media accreditation?
And can we have media accreditation as well, please? We are pleading too much in these podcasts.
What do you think, Ben? Has there been too much talk now with no out and out, right, we definitely don't want to do this from Audi?
I don't know.
They have said out and out, no, we're not doing this. It's just that people don't believe them.
They've said they're not doing it, but they've never officially denied it. But then again, to quote Yes Minister, never believe anything until it's been officially denied.
Yeah.
Previous head of the company said he wasn't going to have anything to do with F1 while Bernie's in charge. This guy isn't in charge anymore. They've got a former F1 driver and team principal turning up at races. There's no smoke without fire, I think. And I don't know if we'll see it next year, but we may see it in 2017 when the next glut of regulations come in.
There's no point in them trying to committing to anything until then, is there really?
Not really, because, I mean, they'd have to start developing something now for 18 months when the first test would be. Anything that they put out next year wouldn't have a suitable development period, and then it'd just be every little bit of work they'd done during this year for next year would just rendered moot in 2 years' time.
I realise it's a diesel hybrid that they've got in LMP1, but I wonder what transferable information there is between the engines that go into LMP1 to what they could do with Formula 1.
Unless Formula 1 switches to diesel hybrids in 2017. Bernie's not mentioned that one yet, and it's an idea that radically changes everything, and everyone will look at him and go, you are right. Time for your milky tea. So, it's one of those things, it's going to... Our Audi coming into Formula 1 is going to drag on as much as our Renault leaving, our Renault buying Red Bull. Is Eric Boullier going to have another cake? Yes. But the other telling question that has cropped up in the conversation that we were having before we started recording. Niki Lauda. What does he do?
What is a Niki Lauda?
He's Austrian.
Don't get me wrong, I love him. I think he's ace. I think he's one of the best things wandering around the paddock these days.
Maybe. This is a thought. He is with Mercedes because he's been in F1 longer than just about anybody else in the paddock.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's Austrian. So he speaks German with the Austrian accent. He also speaks fluent F1. Maybe he's there to translate Toto Wolff.
Do you know what? For a split second there, I actually thought you were going to say something intelligent.
No,
I will not make that mistake again.
No, don't. I mean, he was apparently instrumental in signing Lewis to the team.
Yeah.
And he's non-executive chairman, which effectively means he doesn't get to make any major decisions, and he's just there as a figurehead. It's kind of like, why does Jackie Stewart keep turning up?
I wonder what he did to get Lewis to sign.
Probably, this is just a guess I'm plucking out of thin air, promised him the fastest car on the grid with the best developed engine that everything would be done in house. And I think he's kept his promise.
Yeah. See, it's just that the story reminds me, it's almost Formula 1 related because of Christian Horner's marriage. I remember watching a documentary about the Spice Girls and how they got signed, and the guy that managed them,
Spice World wasn't a documentary.
It was still real to me, goddammit.
It's alright, you think CM Punk's a good wrestler,
and he's the best in the world. They were saying that the manager that had them knocked them back first, and they had a chat about what they were going to do next. And their quote from Scary Spice, I think, was, "We sent Jerry round, and she convinced him to sign us." I do hope that Niki Lauda didn't convince Lewis Hamilton to go to Mercedes.
You do realise that the manager that the Spice Girls had was Simon Fuller, which is the manager that Lewis Hamilton used to have before he started managing himself at the end of last year.
Oh my word.
I don't think there's anything more we can say after that.
No. Don't say it, baby. Just...
Don't say it, baby.
Do you think he said to Simon Fuller, I don't want.
But tell him what you want, what you really, really want. On that note, I think we're going to wrap it up for this week, are we?
We could mention Force India are getting a new car at Silverstone.
Really?
I think it's going to be a Fiat 500 or something.
They'll still be ahead of the manor then.
And apparently at Silverstone, Manor are going to be sponsored by... That would have worked if I could remember a TV programme that's not on anymore that was on years ago. Swap Shop! On that note, I think we'll probably leave it there. We'll be back next week. We're back on schedule for Monday next week, all being well. And we'll have a preview of Austria, which of course is Red Bull's home... Well, Red Bull and Toro Rosso's home race. And I'm sure Red Bull will be hoping for better than last year.
And we might be rolling 4D...
Rap. And we may well have Chris back.
It would be nice.
If we get the chance, we will do some. We'll do a TT wrap up as well next week, because I know we've had a few requests on Twitter about why you're talking about motorsport when you're on the Isle of Man and barely mentioning the TT. You probably heard bikes going past.
Is there something going on?
Apparently, yes. There's some little bike racing.
We probably ought to say well done to Hutchie.
I think we probably should, especially seeing as I've got this accent as well. Ian Hutchinson today won his third race of the TT, and he's looking scary.
He's running away with it.
Yeah, he's back.
He had a big moment, though, didn't he, the other day?
Oh, when he kind of... He was lifting and coasting because he was running out of fuel, he nearly went into a hedge.
Yeah.
So lifting and coasting is wrong. So we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.